And we're back here on 93.3 CFMU FM on Unusual Sources, the program that brings you the sources you don't always or ordinarily get to hear in the corporate media. And certainly there's a need for an alternative perspective or hearing the other side when it comes to the recent conference against racism, the Durban conference, Durban 2. And there's been so much media coverage about it. Even the Daily Show covered it, but in a very one-sided fashion. We should have on the line with us Ali Mullah, Vice President of the Canadian Arab Federation, to talk about this very important issue. Let's see, Ali, are you with us today?
Yes, I am, and thank you for having me.
Oh, great. Thank you. You're coming in loud and clear. That's always nice. Well, I was just saying, I don't know if you caught The Daily Show last night, but I did, and I think it was last night. Jon Stewart was basically attacking President of Iran, President Ahmadinejad, about the statements that were made at the conference against racism. And this was a big media issue, and you'd think a liberal program like The Daily Show might at least try to look at the other side. But they didn't really. In all of the coverage, whether it be the funny media like The Daily Show or the real supposed media like CNN, it seems we didn't hear much about what President Ahmadinejad actually said in his speech. All they did was give us aggressive comments about his speech in general. So do you think that his speech received a fair evaluation?
Certainly not in the Western media, but if you look at the other sources of media, especially in the Middle East and other places, it was received very well and with high approval. But to talk about the Western media, and I didn't see the Daily Show last night, but keep in mind that there were ongoing concerted efforts to demonize Ahmadinejad and to discount whatever he says. As soon as he started his speech at the United Nations Conference on Racism, it was kind of staged when Western delegates walked out, but nobody talked about the 180 delegates for another 180 countries who stayed in and cheered him up.
Yes, the G7 countries are only a few countries. I believe it was the French ambassador in particular who made some statements. He said, and this is a quote from him, as soon as he, referring to Iran's president, started to address the question of the Jewish people and Israel, we had no reason to stay in the room. So he had no reason to stay. I mean, what did he say about the Jewish people in Israel? Was he being anti-Semitic, like some sources were alleging?
Well, it's just very, very questionable, because he did not talk about the Jewish people, and he only mentioned Israel once, when he was referring to the fact that the Western countries or the Western powers somehow were responsible for the current situation in Palestine. And he stated, and I quote, that the West, because of their failure to address the issue of racism in Europe during the World War One and Two, and because of what happened to the Jews in Europe, and, you know, like the Holocaust, which, you know, like it's beyond any imagination, the Western power helped the Jewish people to establish a racist state in Palestine at the expense of other people. Keep in mind that, you know, many people in the many delegates of the G7 and, you know, USA and Canada and Israel, way before even Ahmadinejad was invited to speak, they had clearly stated a position to boycott the Geneva/Durban 2 conference. So in the first place, they had no interest or intention to be sitting there at the table and addressing the issues of racism, discrimination, and reparation for all what they've done in the past.
Well, that's just it. I mean, on the whole staged walkout, like you said, the French ambassador had said, as soon as he started talking about these issues, talking about Israel, we had no reason to stay. So they just left. They don't want to even talk about it. But it's going back to the same old issues. And you had mentioned the prior conference, the first World Conference Against Racism, Durban number 1. That was also an anti-racism conference, but you had similar boycotts happening. I believe the U.S. pulled out, and it was for the same reason, right? That's because they were going to talk about the Israeli treatment of Palestinians in the context of racism, right?
Yeah, in Durban 1, it was only the U.S. and Israel at that time who boycotted the conference. And because of the fact that, you know, there were, you know, very clear indications that delegates from various continent of the world were there to talk about all kind of issues of racism, discrimination, and reparation, and also to address the question of Palestine. Keep in mind that the situation in Palestine is very sensitive to the Western power and now to the U.S., because the state of Israel is a kind of proxy for imperialist and colonialist project, which does not benefit the Jewish people, and does not help the Jewish people, and also does not help bringing peace to the world as a whole.
You know, it seems like there's a pattern here. You know, I mean, in the first Durban conference, it was the United States and Israel that kind of didn't like the final resolutions, because also people were talking about colonialism and the legacy of slavery in Africa and so on, mm-hmm. thanks to the West. And so the U.S. and Israel didn't like that. And then in Durban 2, they got a few other countries like France and so on to walk out. But they're trying to portray this in the media here like it's the international community being upset about the speeches. But really, it's a small group of countries. The rest of the world, represented in the UN, has said they want to talk about Israel and Palestine. They want to talk about what's happening to the Palestinians.
And that showed the underlying racism by the media and Western politicians who will address it from that angle. It's like the whole universe is only centered around, you know, those G7 or G20 and the USA, which in fact is not true. By them having one position, dragging them into discussion about what's going on over there, it will expose their true nature. Keep in mind that France, UK, and the US, and other, especially France and the UK, were colonial power in the 1900s and the 20th century. They were responsible for a huge mess in Africa, in Asia, and in other parts of the world, where they sliced borders, where they sliced countries, and they created all kind of chaos over there. So, of course, they don't want to address this. But, you know, Ahmadinejad today, in a jurist conference in Tehran, said something very telling. He said, for the last 50-plus years, the West has been demanding and dictating. Well, now it is time for them to open their ears and listen.
Yes, and I think after the bombing of Gaza, there's been a real awakening and an awareness of just how dire the human rights situation in Gaza is, in Palestine generally, and this really does need to be addressed if we want to stop this kind of bloodshed. I think the most recent articles in the Toronto newspapers have criticized Harper for not being at this conference, but mainly so that he can't insult the Iranian president in person. I mean, what do you think Canada's role should be at these kind of conferences?
Well, unfortunately, Canada, under the current government we have, has lost a lot of its credibility on the international scene. It becomes another puppet of the George W. Bush school. And, you know, maybe now Mr. Harper and his government think they are the legitimate or illegitimate heirs of the Bush doctrine agenda. Stephen Harper, last year, back to January 2008, and Jason Kenney, declared, like before anything, before any discussion took place around Durban 2 at that time, before switching to Geneva, they said Canada will not participate. And we know this decision is not only coming from Harper, but also it's coming from the circles around Harper, and mainly the Zionist forces in this country. And I think that, you know, it's doing a lot of damage to Canada's name, Canada's reputation, because it's being viewed as just another pawn now with this so-called, imperialist and colonialist project in Palestine. Imagine the United Nations decide to send investigators to Gaza to investigate alleged war crimes. Let me just say alleged, because this is what the United Nations say so far. And Israel declared that it will boycott it and it will not cooperate with it. And you hear no fuss, you hear nothing from the Canadian government or Western power. Well, aren't we, you know, signatory and party to the United Nations Geneva Treaty and all the international treaties that insist on prosecuting war crimes and all kind of violations that take place around the world? Imagine if it was the opposite. Imagine if it were the Palestinian who committed those kind of genocide and massacre against Israelis, and they killed, like, in less than 22 days, 1,500 Israelis. Do you think we would have the same reaction? Of course we would not.
Yes, and Jason Kenney, you mentioned Jason Kenney, I think they're just laughing at the expectations that Canadians would otherwise have of our foreign policy conduct. You'd expect balance, but that's not what we're getting, because Kenney is the same person who banned Galloway, and he's the same person who cut off funding to the Canadian Arab Federation, right? And this cuts to a huge issue, and that is, you know, fairness. People in Canada want fair treatment in the Middle East. They want Canada to take a balanced position, and they want our own government organizations and government-funded organizations to be treated fairly too. So, I mean, how do you react to the cutting of funding to the Canadian Arab Federation because of comments that were made that our government didn't agree with?
Well, before I talk about the cuts, you know, Jason Kenney, with the new name as Mr. Censorship, you know, made Canada a laughing stock around the world by that ill-advised and stupid decision to ban George Galloway. Imagine inside occupied Palestine, so many notable Jewish writers, journalists, and intellectuals debating and criticizing and exposing the atrocities and the practices of the State of Israel. And they write this stuff, you know, from the Haaretz to the Guardian, while Mr. Censorship doesn't want Canadians to hear a British MP who got elected 5 times to enter to Canada and talk about his recent trip to Gaza. Jason Kenney, before becoming a minister, back to early 2000, is known with his Islamophobic and racist views. This guy graduated from the die-hard reformers, you know, from the old days of Preston Manning and Stockwell Day and the rest of the list. Even he admitted in a radio interview with Calgary radio station that before he was appointed a minister, he was pushing to go after Canadian Arab Federation and Canadian Islamic Congress and other groups who are criticizing the State of Israel and also speaking up for Palestinians.
You know, that reminds me, one of Kenny's staffers was trained by the neoconservative movement in the United States, one of his staffers who insulted Galloway on a very personal level. So,
You mean that little boy, Velshi?
Yes, yes.
Oh, that little boy, Velshi, I don't know if he's still crying, but he wrote an article once. He studied in UK, and then he did his training in the U.S. And when Conrad Black was arrested and prosecuted, he cried. He admitted crying over the fate of that great man, Conrad Black. That by itself telling you what kind of staff he has around him.
I have no words. I don't know what to say, crying about Conrad Black.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of really corrupt people that should be in prison, and people are usually happy. So, yes, very right-wing neoconservative values that he's brought from outside into Canada. And on the other hand, people that have been trained inside Canada by Preston Manning, and as you say, in the case of Jason Kenney.
Yeah.
These aren't the values that Canadians stand for.
No. And you know, the point is, when a government or a minister goes beyond his authority and beyond the jurisdiction of his office to engage in a political debate with a community groups or organization that deliver service to ordinary citizens and penalize them for their political views, this is, you know, worse than dictatorship. Because I say worse because if you are living in a dictatorship regime, you know who are you dealing with. But in a country like Canada and in a society like ours, when we claim to have a Canadian values, when we claim about the freedom of speech and political expression, when we have the right of assembly and all this kind of stuff, and you have a minister, and more than one minister, but let me just stay with the censorship minister, going after students, imagine that, at university and college campuses, organizing activities, forums, debate, and workshops around what's going on in Palestine, goes after a union which has an all-democratic right to debate inside its union hall and with their members which position they take, and to go after a community organization like Canadian Arab Federation, set to penalize it because the leadership of the organization does not agree and condone the political views of that minister and exercise his power to cut off that funding for programs which does not benefit the organization. It does benefit people who benefit from the service, who learn English. Imagine it's the same minister in the same week. He was saying and quoted in the paper, well, all immigrants have to learn one of the official language. Well, I don't know what type of smoke he was smoking. He was just cutting off a program that delivered language instruction to newcomers, then had the audacity to go on a national program and demand that immigrant to learn English. Of course they will.
Right. So he said all the immigrants should learn English, and then he cut funding to a program that taught all sorts of immigrants.
Exactly.
It's sort of crazy.
Yeah, it's a laughable matter. It's, you know, but just, you know, the case now before the court, which I will not be at liberty to comment much on it, but there is, you know, public record, because as a Canadian Federation, we applied for injunction against the minister. And it's very interesting if you just Google it and you get the public record where the judge cited in many instances and in many paragraphs in his decision and his ruling that the conduct of the minister poses a lot of serious questions, and it's a serious concern and cause for a full judicial review. Even the president of the organization, if chooses to, have a solid ground to go after the minister for defamation and labor.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, what about the future? I mean, you know, this government, I don't know how long it's going to last, and things are changing. You have all these tours. You have George Galloway, the attention to his case, and you had the Grand Mufti of Palestine and bishops traveling with him, talking to all sorts of audiences. So it seems that people are getting organized on this. You can go to defendfreespeech.ca about Galloway, and there's other stuff going on too. So how do you see things looking up?
Well, you know, interesting you mentioned that. Just last week at the University of Toronto, one of the University of Toronto buildings, we launched the campaign for the free speech, and, you know, stay tuned. You know, within a few days or short weeks, we will have a full website, and that campaign is supported by many groups and organizations, because people are fed up and people are not just accepting to take this and sit back. It is beyond this current government, because we didn't see much from the opposition as well. I don't know if we have an opposition in the first place. You know, imagine Professor Ignatieff, saying that even though he does not agree with Mr. Galloway, but he thinks the ban is bad unless the security border have a solid reason. Well, first of all, what kind of stuff you don't agree with Galloway on? This guy has been promoting agenda of peace, anti-war, and everything he said in the last 7-8 years turned out to be true. You know, from the situation in Iraq, or the occupation in Afghanistan, or the situation in Palestine.
Yes, well, I'm just thinking in terms of just the disappointments we've seen from what's supposed to be the opposition. But we've mentioned some of the campaigns that are happening, so I think people can tune into that. I do see change in the air. Well, this is great. I mean, we were able to cover a lot today with the Durban Conference about racism all the way to the unfortunate cutting off of funding to the CAF. So we can definitely stay tuned on that.